Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The coronavirus pandemic has brought the norms of everyday life to a halt, but that hasn't stopped our need to take care of each other. In fact, arguably, in some cases, it's probably even increased that need. So in this era of social distancing, how do we still show up for our friends, our neighbors, our communities? All this hour, we want to talk about that. We'll hear from local community organizers. We'll hear from religious leaders. We also want to hear from you about what's happening in your community. How have you and others been taking care of each other? Maybe somebody's been taking care of you and you want to recognize them. Call us with your stories. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. To start, let's check in with the nonprofit sector, which has been really hit by the economic impact of the virus. Joining us to do that is Erin McAleer, president of Project Bread. Welcome, Erin.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Mark Culleton, founder and CEO of College Bound Dorchester and Boston Uncornered. Welcome back, Mark.
Hey, thanks, Tiziana.
Great to have you both. And I want to ask you both to start by telling our listeners the importance of your work in the context of the coronavirus pandemic. Erin, I'll let you go first.
Sure. Project Bread is the statewide anti-hunger organization, and we had a hunger crisis here in Massachusetts and our country before COVID-19, but obviously it's escalated in recent weeks. So our organization is connecting individuals to food, both in the immediate term, but also food sources to ensure that they're able to access food in the days and weeks and months to come.
How about you, Mark?
Boston Uncornered is about engaging gang-involved young people to move from the corner to college, but really to transform their communities. And so we're reaching out to some of the most powerful but marginalized and vulnerable part of our population. And so our whole focus since this happened was to be there for those that are on the fringes and that aren't engaged with other sort of systems of support.
I feel like in this moment, some of the challenges we're all facing, we've seen coming, and some of them we did not see coming at all. So to the two of you, what have been the biggest challenges as a result of the crisis, and which one or ones did you not see coming?
Yeah, I mean, I think the traditional ways of accessing food, you know, school meals are one of the most critical anti-hunger programs in America. In Massachusetts, there's over 500,000 kids who receive free reduced price lunch. Obviously, it was over the course of one weekend where we had to transfer that model into an entirely new one. Fortunately, we had a playbook for it. There's a program called Summer Eats that we use in the summer when school is out. We had to implement it many months early. We had to find new partners who had never run this program before. And, you know, we had to put new processes into place. I mean, we have today school buses that are delivering school meals in Massachusetts communities. That's something that has never been done before.
I'm struck, Erin, by the creativity of that. And I think that's probably something that we'll hear more about as we learn how nonprofits are responding. Mark, what did you expect? What's been the biggest change and maybe something you didn't expect?
Well, I think in our community in Dorchester, Roxbury, Mattapan, immediately people were sort of thrown out of work and without basic needs. And so for us, the need to get as much cash and support and resources right away to the young people and the families that they serve was critically important. And then also to connect to the disconnected, and how do you do that in a virtual setting? So we went remote right away, but really had to get out there and get people connected to systems, find ways to communicate with them through their phones, through Snapchat, whatever that means is, to keep them connected, to keep them feeling okay, but really to get them resources for basic needs to be able to survive and to not feel alone.
Will they benefit from any of the money coming through the stimulus package, Mark?
Well, so the truth is that we're concerned that that won't happen for the most marginalized communities, because lots of the young people we work with have never filed a tax return. Many are couch surfing without an address. We spent last week getting about 100 young people bank accounts for the first time. We think that there's a whole swath of the population that won't be served. And so we feel like that's our job. And thankfully, we have some great longtime supporters and foundations and individuals that are stepping up to fill that gap.
Aaron, is there a surge in number of people who need food? So you gave an example of a program that needed to find a new way to distribute. But how are you faring in terms of just sheer volume of demand?
Yeah, so our food source hotline has seen a quadruple increase in call volume, and we're at week four now. So first week it was double, then it was triple. So now we're monitoring, you know, is this going to continue? Are we going to, you know, 4 weeks from now say we've got eight times the number of callers? So we've had to bring on three additional counselors to that team just to meet the demand for people looking to access food. And our counselors also, we're really focused as an organization on the federal nutrition programs. We think that they are the only programs that can meet the scale of this crisis. And by that, I mean school meals, SNAP, formerly food stamps, and WIC, that are federally paid for and can reach hundreds of thousands of individuals. So our hotline is also signing people up, doing SNAP applications. And so we've seen a quadruple increase across the board in calls, but also in application assistance.
As I listen to both of you, I feel sort of increasingly frantic as we're talking about this. And I guess the other thing that I'm wondering about is how are your workers and are they all working?
Yeah, so we felt like it was important to let people know that their jobs were secure. Our mentors are really frontline folks that need to be there and be there mentally and physically, even if it's from a social distance. So we ensured that we would support their jobs moving forward, the students that we stipend that too, and then really feel like it's critically important to have that connection in the mental health component and opportunities for people to take advantage of mental health supports in order to be there. And then those of us that could took significant pay reductions to ensure that we would be there for the most vulnerable, because that's really what I most worry about, both short-term and then long-term for our community.
Aaron, I think about, you do a big walk that raises a significant portion of your budget in May every year. I'm assuming you're not doing the walk, and I'm assuming that means there's money you got to make up.
Yeah, so we did cancel the walk in early March, and we were expecting to raise about $2 million from that event. We, our most dedicated walkers are still actually raising funds, and they're now raising funding for COVID-19. So, and our most dedicated supporters are the ones that usually raise the most amount of money. Now I don't think we're going to reach 2 million without having the physical event, but we do think that we'll still be able to at least close some of that gap. But yeah, I mean, I would echo what Mark said. My first instinct in supporting our employees was, especially because we had to cancel our major fundraising event, was to just assure them that their jobs were secure. People are, you know, professionally dealing with the COVID-19 crisis, but also personally. And I felt strongly that we can't be on the front lines responding to this crisis while our staff was worried about their positions. So providing job security, but similarly providing overall support, you know, encouraging them to reach out if they need mental health services, has been really important to us, because we need our team to, you know, last for the days and weeks and unfortunately months to come. This crisis is certainly going to be with us for a long time.
I know you both know that I ran a large nonprofit. We did food pantries as was one of the things we did. And in late 2008, early 2009, I had somebody who worked for us who had retired from his first career. He was an older adult who'd been a child during the Great Depression, and he came home back to the office from one of our food pantries, white as a sheet, and he said to me, that wasn't a food pantry, that was a bread line. I remember that from my childhood. And I wonder, what are people not seeing that you're seeing in what the needs of this moment are creating? How can you bring that home to the people who are listening?
Well, I mean, I think we have to understand that those we serve and have the joy to work with are incredibly powerful and resilient, but their lives are incredibly vulnerable as well. I think about a student we serve who has been couch surfing since he got out of jail and doesn't have a permanent address. And so is like just staying at friends or staying. And so when we say shelter in place or stay in your home, what does that mean for somebody who doesn't have a home? Mm-hmm. And so usually just goes out and goes to school, goes somewhere else, and now has no place to go. And so that's why we feel like the cash transfers directly to those most impacted is so important, because if he can give that family a couple $100 to help them buy food and to help them keep him on the couch, that's good for him. But more importantly, it's good for us all when we're trying to do the things. But it's just a very different world than most people think of when they think do social distancing or stay in your home. If you don't have a home, if you don't have a bank account, if you don't have taxes filed, all of these resources may pass you by, and we need to be there for these young people, these members of our community, or we'll all suffer.
And Aaron, if someone's listening today and they're hungry and they need food support or they need other aid, where do they go? Where would you send them?
Yeah, I would say call Project Bread's food source hotline. The number is 1-800-645-8333. We can provide services in 160 languages and also for the hearing impaired. So please reach out and we will connect you to programs available in your community, but also connect you to the federal nutrition program.
I just want to repeat that number. Was that 800-645-8333?
That's correct.
Okay. Aaron McAleer, president of Project Bread, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Mark Culleton, founder and CEO of College Bound Dorchester and Boston Uncornered, thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And I wish you both safety and well. Before we go to the break, we have some callers already, and I'd like to get at least one in. So let's go to Ellen in Brookline. Ellen, what's on your mind?
What's on my mind is that on, like, this is 3 days before my birthday, and I was shopping at the CVS in Coolidge Corner, and, you know, it took me so long just to find one item. And then after I just got barely two items, I had them in a handbasket, whatever. And I go to the cashier to pay for my items. And I, you know, because, you know, it took me so long to find the first item, the cashier, whose name was James, you know, I used my debit card or whatever. And I paid for the items, and he put the items in one of the small CVS bags, what happened was,
Did you forget something?
Well, yeah, my keys to my apartment, you know, with the fob on them so I could get in the door, you know, because like in CVS you have the scan tag and everything, so I took out that.
Did James bring them to you, Ellen?
I was right outside the door, and all of a sudden, like, I see this hand, like, reach out, I took the keys, and I ran across the street to go home.
Good job, James, and good job, Ellen, for giving James that shout-out. I think this is the day to do that. I really appreciate your call.